It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey.
Come on, you poor workers, good news to you I'll tell. How the good old union has come in here to dwell. Which side are you on? Which side are you on? If you go to Harlan County, there is no neutral there. You'll either be a union man or a thug for J.H. Blair. Which side are you on?
In the early 1970s, a young filmmaker named Barbara Koppel heard a story on NPR about leadership elections for the United Mine Workers of America, which was then among the strongest labor unions in the entire country. Koppel set out to cover the story, and eventually that led her to Harlan County, Kentucky. That's where the Brookside Miners had recently voted to join the UMW of A. When the company they work for, Duke Power, refused to sign their contract, they went on strike.
And so began the Battle of Harlan County, USA.
Which side are you on?
Without organization, you are a lone individual. Without influence and without recognition of any kind.
They're treating us like that we're animals, dogs. Well, we aren't. We're American citizens.
Koppel followed not only the strikers, but especially the women who were standing behind them and very often in front of them with sticks in their hands. Koppel and her crew became part of their lives, living in their homes and taking meals with them. Out of this, she made an incredible work of art and journalism. Her film, Harlan County, USA, won the Oscar for Best Documentary in 1977, and it went on to shape a generation of filmmakers in and beyond the cinema verite tradition. In April, Koppel came to Champaign to present the film as part of the Ebert Fest Film Festival. She joined us in studio in Urbana to talk about it. Because the conversation is on tape, we cannot take your calls live, but you can always let us know what you think about our program. Our email address, talk@21stshow.org. Okay, here now is Barbara Koppel on Harlan County, USA.
Like I said, and I believe that, you made this great work of art in journalism. You're still being asked to talk about this 50 years later. How is that for you? 48 years later, I suppose.
It's wonderful. It's my favorite film of all my films. It was my first one, and I understood so much about what life and death was all about people who were really standing up for what they believed in, even though, you know, they had nothing and they were willing to give up everything, even their lives, to get the union of their choice. Coal mining is very dangerous. You get something called black lung. It's pneumocomiosis, and it takes a young man's life and they can't breathe from it. And it's also, this film is a film about love and community, and the women are incredible. All of their lives, they would say things like, you know, my father worked in the mine and my grandfather worked in the mine. And when they had the chance to do something, they just stepped right up and they were there, no matter how difficult or how tough it was.
Well, let's dive right into it then, because one of the key characters in the film is a woman named Lois Scott. Tell me about how you came to know her and how she came to be this leader of a group of really men. You think of coal miners, you think of men, but it's the women who are front and center in this film.
Well, the men could only have, I think, three people on the picket line. So the women said, we can have as many as we want. And Lois Scott was the leader. She was so determined and so incredible. I met them all on my very first day in Eastern Kentucky. We had come and we had gone down Pine Mountain, and it was pouring rain that morning, and there were no side rails, and another car sort of sped by us, and our car dumped over the hillside, and nobody was hurt, and we crawled out with our equipment, went down to the picket line, and, you know, in Eastern Kentucky, Harlan County, you know, everybody knows everything in a minute. And so when we came, they heard about it. But the first day that we were there, they didn't trust us at all. They gave us phony names. They called us Martha Washington. They called themselves Martha Washington, Florence Nightingale, and, You know, we looked like a bunch of hippies from New York.
And you were, indeed, in some ways. So how do you develop? I mean, one thing that's so remarkable about the film when you're watching it, and especially, I mean, I first saw it, I don't know, 20 years ago on a small tube television. Now I get to watch it on a nice big LCD screen, which is, I'm sure, a little closer to the actual theatrical experience people will have Thursday night. You feel so close to these people. The faces fill the frames. Talk about achieving that level of intimacy and being in there with them.
Well, once they realized that we were there for good purposes, they just took us into their homes. They fed us. They cared for us. There was no running water, so we'd have to pump water to take baths and things like that. I remember I slept with Angela Johnson, who is a little girl, and she would wet her bed all the time.
Oh, jeez.
So those were the kinds of feelings and sensibilities of really getting close to people.
So what draws you to do this sort of work, to make documentaries about labor workers? I mean, you're in New York City at the time. You're on the East Coast. You went to college on the East Coast. What draws you to Eastern Kentucky?
Well, as you had said earlier, I heard about on NPR.
Thank you.
My favorite station, and now my son's favorite station. And they were talking about going on strike, that Arnold Miller was going to run against W.A. Tony Boyle, who was later convicted for paying for the murders of Joseph Jock Yablonski, his wife and daughter, who were going to run against him. And he was found guilty. And one of Arnold Miller's promises when he became president was to organize the unorganized. And I wanted to make sure that he was telling the truth. And so that's what drew me there. And I also filmed with Arnold Miller. I filmed with Tony Boyle. I filmed the campaign. I filmed old miners talking and singing and telling stories. This one guy named Nimrod Workman, who said he worked in the mine, and if a man got hurt, that was nothing because they could always hire another man. But if a mule got hurt, they were very upset because they had to buy that mule.
I remember that scene. It's so wrenching to hear somebody talk about their life that way. How did you, so you went in there, it sounds like you had a point of view, and this is something we talk about today in journalism, right? Should journalists have this point of view? Talk about how you came, what formed your point of view? What made you think that it was your role to hold the United Mine Workers accountable for their campaign promises?
I just felt as a human being that I wanted to see it. I was curious because I was interested in politicians who said that they were going to do something and didn't do something. But I lost that point of view immediately because I just got wrapped up in the people, who they were, what they were doing, what they were willing to give up. And also, too, a big part of this film is the music. Everybody at night sits and plays the banjo and sings, and the music connects the storyline, and it's quite amazing. So I wasn't there with preconceived notions. I was there as part of the community. I was there as somebody who didn't want their voices to be silenced, and because nobody would know about their story if we weren't there. We were the only film crew that was there.
If you're just joining us, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're listening back to my April conversation with filmmaker Barbara Koppel about her work, Harlan County, USA. She's a two-time Oscar-winning director for this film and American Dream in 1991. She also received a Lifetime Achievement Award at the 44th Annual News and Documentary Emmys in 2023. She was a special guest at this year's Ebert Fest, and there was a screening of Harlan County, USA as part of that. Again, we're on tape, so no calls for this part of the show, but let us know what you thought. Our email address, talk@21stshow.org, talk@21stshow.org. Back to the conversation, as Barbara talked about her hopes for the Ebert Fest screening.
And my dream would be to have different people. If you're a member of the union here, like SEIU, or you would come and you would bring friends and bring people and look at the film and then let me know what the union movement is now in this community. That would be so wonderful.
Well, maybe that's a good bridge to talk about. About where the union movement is today, because I went back and looked at some of the election records for Harlan County, right? And it was kind of a bellwether county, and I think it had voted for Nixon in 72, and then it went with Carter in 76, and now it's, you know, Trump 88%, I think, last time around. Talk about, you know, what has happened to labor in America.
Well, it's interesting because I guess I'm doing my third labor film now, and it's on modern day labor. And it's the Teamsters, UPS, it's Amazon fighting, the workers fighting for a union, it's the baristas with Starbucks, and it's the deliveryistas, who are the people who deliver to you, you know, your noodle soup or whatever. And each one has just incredible stories. The deliveryistas, unfortunately, I had to go to a funeral of one who was killed. They have to buy their own bikes. They have to buy their own warm clothes. They're not a part of anything. Most of them could get deported, so that's very frightening right now. The baristas are kept so that when they're very close to getting medical benefits, their hours are dropped. And with Amazon, the people work so hard and their trucks are 100 degrees and every part of their body hurts. And it's a tough situation out there.
Yeah. What do you think that, the labor, America is so much less organized than it was at the time of Harlan County, USA.
Yeah. When I started Harlan County, there were 150,000 miners. Now there's 25,000 miners. So miners have stopped. But I don't know, just going back to Harlan County, and these people are the salt of the earth. They're decent. They're human. They're really people who care about each other and help each other. And I mean, we were machine gunned with semi-automatic carbines. A miner was killed by a company foreman. Women took over the picket line. So you can imagine what was happening. At nights, we slept on the floor with mattresses because people would shoot into, you know, the people's homes.
Mm-hmm. So do you get the sense, though, that did the unions lose people? Did the companies break the people? What is response?
Well, today they have something called union busters who get paid an exceedingly large amount of money to break the union, and they have private situations with them, and people get fired if they're a union organizer inside their plants or wherever they're working.
Which is supposed to be illegal.
Supposed to be.
Supposed to be, yeah.
Supposed to be.
All right, we have Dennis calling from Decatur. Dennis, thank you for calling in.
You're welcome, and thank you for being on the show today. I just watched this show maybe within the last 2 weeks. It mesmerized me. I just couldn't believe this had happened not that long ago. But it was just such a great film. I wonder what happened for that barrel. I think he was a union, anti-union guy. Some barrel something.
Basil Collins.
Basil
Collins, yep.
Basil Collins, and he worked for the coal company, ma'am?
Yes, he was the chief manager, the chief henchman.
Okay,
and,
yeah.
And he was twirling a gun. He wanted to know who I was, and he said, come over here, honey. Yeah. And he was twirling a gun.
I saw that, yeah.
And it was pretty scary. He said, do you have press credentials? And I actually did from United Press. And so I yelled for, you know, Ann Lewis, who worked with me, to get it. And she was taking her time. And I started asking him questions about the people out there and how he felt about it. And then he said, now, where is this press, you know, thing you have. And I said, do you have identification? And he said, well, I swear I might have lost mine. And I said, I might have misplaced mine also. And yeah. He went across the bridge, and the women said to me, he's going to kill you. And I went, oh, no. But when you're right, young and in your 20s, you don't think about that. You think you're going to live forever.
Yeah.
You don't. You're right. These people are the salt of the earth. And that was, the conditions they lived in were just appalling to me. But anyway, it was a wonderful film. And thank you for doing that.
Oh, and thank you for calling in.
Thank you so much for calling in, Dennis. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Thanks. Bye, Dennis.
We need to take a break in about a minute and a half, but maybe talk about that. I think people would be surprised at you mentioned lack of running water. What was daily life like, especially for these people who had no income or just, you know, minimal strike income for a year by the time you get there?
They lived in houses where they had newspaper on the walls as wallpaper and also to make sure that the rain didn't come in. It was an outhouse in the back. And it was very tough living, but their lives were so full because they sang and they talked and they gossiped and there were a real community of helping each other. If somebody got sick or something happened, people were there for them. And that's sometimes richer than anything else you could ever want.
Okay, we need to take another break on the program, but first a quick programming note. The race to succeed Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin is underway. What questions do you have for candidates Juliana Stratton, Robin Kelly, and Raja Krishnamurti? The 21st show will soon interview those candidates and others. We'd like to include your questions. Email us, talk@21stshow.org is the address. We may use your questions when I interview the candidates on upcoming editions of the program. That said, when we return, more from my conversation with filmmaker Barbara Koppel about Harlan County, USA. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.
Remember the disaster at the Mannington Mine. We're 78 good men, so useless.
We're 42 years in a mighty long time. I labor gun tall down in a coal mine, down in a deep hole where the bright light did glow. Back in a dark room, us fading up cold. My bones, they did ache me. My kneecaps got bad. Down on a hard rock, on a set of knee pads. The motors were shifting, I got sand in my hair. Both lungs were broke down from a breathing bad air.
It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're listening to one of the voices in the documentary Harlan County, USA, made by filmmaker Barbara Koppel and her team. It came out in 1976 and won an Oscar in 77. She was in Illinois earlier this year for Ebertfest in Champaign-Urbana, and she joined me in studio in April. Again, we're on tape for this part of the show, so no calls, but you can always let us know what you think about our program. talk@21stshow.org is the address.
We heard, I don't know if you can just talk a little bit about the music in the film. We heard another excerpt there. You are the sound recordist for the film yourself. You work with
yes.
camera person, other crew, but you
yes.
captured so much great music of these people. Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you one story, which is Hazel Dickens, who's a wonderful singer. She was a coal miner's daughter, and I used tons of her music without asking her. And I remember she was playing at the Smithsonian in D.C. And I went and I spoke to her and I said, "Hi, I'm doing a film on coal miners and I've used a lot of your music and I want you to come see it and let me know if it's okay." And she sort of looked at me and I said, "I'll pay your way. You can stay wherever you want." And she said, "Of course." And she came and she loved it. And she gave me all her music for free. And she wrote the last song of the film, "They'll Never Keep Us Down." And what happened with that was when we were showing the film at Lincoln Center, where it had its premiere, the New York Film Festival, I Xeroxed 1,000 copies of the song and we put it in people's playbills. And she came out and we asked everybody to sing along and they sang along. And it was beautiful. And then Lois Scott, who's one of the great women in the film, had just been made head of the Black Lung Association. And she decided this would be a good group to raise money for Black Lung. And so she's there she is, and she's standing on the stage, and she's telling them all about Black Lung and how they need money. And people are throwing $5, $10, and $20 bills at Alice Tully Hall, my first film. And I'm in a corner laughing. I didn't know what to do. And she forgot she was mic'd. And she said, "Barbara, you stop that laughing and you pick up that money and stuff it in your bra. We need it." So that's part of the music.
and the really politics. Keeping in character with her from what we see in the film.
Oh, absolutely. But it was great. And the head of the festival, Richard Rout, said, "Okay, Barbara, next year you'll do it on rollerblades." I said, "Wow, I'd love that."
All right. So one of the things that we talked about a little bit about earlier that I want to dive deeper into is some of the violence in the film. The caller mentioned Basil Collins, I think.
Basil,
thank you. Yes, Basil Collins. At one point, he points a gun at you and your crew and the other people who are out there. Talk about that day. What was that experience like for you?
Well, Basil Collins survived the Bataan Death March.
Wow.
So that makes him a pretty tough character. And he came and he was coming in to go to work. And he comes in, and I don't know whether it's our fault or not, but Anne had the lights, and maybe they were shining in his eyes. And so he took his gun out, and he pointed it at us. And I could just hear myself screaming, "Don't shoot," as at the top of my lungs. And they went across the bridge, and then they came back. And I figured, I brought people here. I have to protect them. So I moved forward. And of course, they got me. They kicked me, but I had a Nagra on that had a plastic top. So
it's
I didn't...
a large recording device,
yes,
for people who are not familiar with that. Yeah.
Yes. And I was swinging my mic at them furiously as they were kicking me. They went after Hart Perry, who was the camera person, trying to break his camera and hurt him. And also Ann Lewis, who had the lights and broke the lights. So they thought that we couldn't film because it was dark. But we filmed anyway, of course. But it was pretty frightening. You feel those juices in your mouth, you know, when that happens, that sense of fear.
It's amazing that the cameras kept working, that the film wasn't destroyed. I don't know if they just didn't understand how.
Yeah, we gaffer taped the lens together, you know. And there was also another film group in Whitesburg, Kentucky. And so the next day we went and we asked them if we could borrow a few cables and things like that. And they were very nice and let us have them.
Oh, that's wonderful. You know, the violence is such a part of this film, and you mentioned earlier one of the young miners was killed. There are people who have said, and I can't remember if it was in the film itself or in some of the extras that people can find if they watch the Criterion edition of your film, but that if the cameras hadn't been there, there might have been more violence.
Oh, absolutely, yes. And we would be there even if we didn't have film in our camera. And what we would say is, you know, nobody wants to, you know, kill people in living color.
Yeah.
And so that's why they also wanted to destroy us. Houston Elmore, who was one of the organizers, told me, he said, Barbara, there's a $5,000 ransom on your head. So if you get killed, you know, somebody will get $5,000. And he told me afterwards. And I said, Houston, why didn't you tell me? And he said, because we didn't want you to leave. And I said, I wasn't going to leave.
Yeah. Are there lessons for today? We're in another era now, and there have been these cycles of political violence in American history. The period of 68 through the 1970s was certainly another one. Are there lessons for what we're experiencing today as people are starting to get back to the streets to take on what's happening in Washington?
Yes. I mean, I think we just don't know what's going to happen. I mean, you think of Charlottesville, where a woman was killed by the Klan. People are very angry. The country is very split, and you just don't know what to expect. People are doing mass shootings at universities still, and it's a very frightening time.
This is the 21st Show. If you're just joining us, we're listening back to my April conversation with Barbara Koppel, the filmmaker behind Harlan County, USA, the Oscar-winning documentary. It was screened as part of Ebert Fest this year at the Virginia Theater in Champaign. Let's pick back up where we left off as we went to the phones.
Rebecca is calling from Southern Illinois, or at least heading towards Southern Illinois. Rebecca, thank you for calling.
Hey,
yo.
Thank you for having me. I just, I don't know if you are familiar with the town of Herrin, Illinois, but it too had some pretty violent activity in the mines back in 1922. There was a Herrin massacre that happened between the miners there and the company. And I'm very interested in your movie and would like to see it, but I will not be able to make it to Champaign. Where can I see this?
The Criterion Collection has it. And if you're really nice, I can send you a link to see it.
If you there's a streaming service called the Criterion Channel. I know you can find it on a Blu-ray or DVD from the Criterion online, or it's at Barnes & Noble sometimes.
Okay.
We'll have them in stock. I think somebody has told me it was also on Prime or Max or whatever HBO is calling it.
HBO Max.
Yeah,
yeah.
HBO Max.
And
yeah.
So, and if you can't get it from there, you know, leave your email with the station.
Okay.
And thank you for wanting to see it. That means a lot to me.
All right, stay on the
Both of my grandfathers were coal miners, so we understand that lifestyle. So thank you.
Rebecca,
thanks
for calling in.
I'll definitely send you a link.
Stay on the line, Rebecca, and one of our producers
you.
Will talk to you and get your contact information. So we're coming to the end of our time together.
That's too bad.
I appreciate that. I've really enjoyed talking with you.
Likewise.
What does it mean to be talking about this work at Ebert Fest? I mean, he was a champion of your film in particular, Roger Ebert was. He's obviously a big figure. He's from Urbana, Illinois originally. He's a big figure here. Talk about that.
Yeah. Well, Roger Ebert means the world to me. I knew him. And he was the kind of guy who was really straight with you, so intelligent, and he really was a humanitarian, and he really cared about films, and he pushed films. I mean, his festival at the beginning were for films that people didn't really ordinarily get to see. So you can see what kind of person he is. The way he wrote was beautiful and clear and precise. And plus, he's a lot of fun. He was a lot of fun to be with.
Yeah, he's a great, great, great man. Are there particular memories about how he approached your films in particular, Harlan County, USA?
He told me that it was one of the films that he really loved and that he so respected the film and the people in the film. And if more films could be made like this, we'd be able to communicate a lot better with each other.
Yeah. Last thing I want to ask you about, I was looking at the categories for the Oscars in Best Documentary 1977 when you won. And this is perhaps more of an indictment of my own lack of film literacy, but those other films, I don't know that they're certainly not as much discussed as Harlan County, USA. What makes a documentary stand the test of time?
Well, I don't know what makes a documentary stand the test of time, but they placed that year all the documentarians together in the theater where the Oscars were going to be called. And when our category came up, we all linked arms. And when Harlan County was called up, I could feel my heart beating somewhere in the auditorium. And there were these arms on either side of me that pushed me up. So I think it's we as documentarians, there's a lot of solidarity. And we want each other to succeed. And it's very important.
Barbara Koppel is the filmmaker behind Harlan County, USA, and other documentaries. She's a two-time Oscar winner for this film and American Dream in 1991. She also received a Lifetime Achievement Award at the 44th Annual News and Documentary Emmys in 2023. She spoke with us on the program in April when she was in Champaign-Urbana for Ebertfest. And that is it for us today. Before we go, a quick word on what's coming up this week. Tomorrow, we're set to be joined in studio by Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton. She's campaigning to succeed Illinois U.S. Senator Dick Durbin as he ends his long career in Congress. Later this week, we'll bring you coverage of Governor's Day and Republican Day at the Illinois State Fair. That's all coming up later this week. We mentioned the music of Hazel Dickens earlier in today's conversation, and we're going to leave you with some of that. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.
Don't support them.